Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and streaming on the web at
kcbq.com.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder if the Bible is something to be taken literally. For example, should we accept a literal six-day creation account? Now, if you've been following this show, you realize that question has come up a lot lately. So today, we will dig in and try to unpack some of this stimulating topic. But first, I guess we should be careful about using a word like stimulate because it reminds us of Obama's stimulus package. And you don't have to be an economist to see through this stimulus package. It's a Trojan horse, and not even a very good Trojan horse at that. A Trojan horse to supposedly hide every leftist agenda that's been soaring in the air for decades, like a vulture waiting patiently for capitalism to look ill. Peering beyond such necessities as providing every American with a converter box for their TV sets, I think Nancy Pelosi sums it up all quite well when she talks about the sex education stimulus. No pun intended. Well, maybe. If babies are born, Pelosi says with a smile, that will ultimately help our economy. Now, do I really need to even comment on this? Let's be merciful and simply ignore the brilliantly crafted statement. Does any part of the proposed fix actually create new jobs? Yes, a small portion does, but for all intents and purposes, only government jobs. I don't think we need a brain half the size of Einstein's to help us understand that government jobs do not stimulate the economy. Government jobs stimulate the government. Our economy may be shrinking, but our government seems to grow bigger every day, and it doesn't even need that extra bowl of Cheerios. Allow me to make a few suggestions, which, if taken seriously, would have a genuine effect upon the financial crisis around us. Number one, fine all companies hiring illegal aliens. Did you hear me? Somebody had to say it. I'll say it. Fine all companies hiring illegal aliens. Once the illegals are out of work, they will not need to be rounded up. They will leave all on their own. A good deal of California's bottomless pit was created by free health care and free education for illegal aliens paid for by California tax dollars. You want free health care? Renounce your citizenship, move to Mexico, become a citizen, sneak across the border, turn yourself in as an illegal alien. You'll get free health care and a free education. And now, California wants the rest of the country to bail them out with other people's tax dollars. So that's my first suggestion. Fine all companies hiring illegal aliens. Number two, for 1 year, do not tax any corporation. Number three, for 1 year, do not tax any small businesses either. Number four, as a matter of fact, for 1 year, don't tax anybody. Now you're saying, Bob, if we do that, the government won't get any revenue. I got news for you, McFly. The government can go without revenue for a while because lately our government doesn't seem to require a genuine cash flow to print more money anyway. So this will make zero difference to the government, but a big difference to the private sector. Oh, one more thing, and I do believe this will have a terrific effect, if not on the economy, at least on public morale. Have Nancy and Pelosi and Barney Frank run a lemonade stand. It might just be the first genuine help they have ever offered our economy. When asked during his press conference why the stimulus package did not end up being as bipartisan as he had promised, Obama responded by telling us that he had difficulty taking criticism from those who presided over the national debt. Naturally, that all translates into the word Republican. You remember the Republicans, the party that actually was not running Congress for the last 2 years. And correct me if I'm mistaken, but wasn't Obama serving as a senator during that period, at least when he wasn't out campaigning? Don't you just love politicians? You got to love them. They could sell you used cars without any brakes and then sell you the brakes, like Mr. Haney from Green Acres. Now, I know I'm dating myself. Remember that program, fellow baby boomers? Actually, the rest of you can still watch it anytime you want on DVD or just go to TV Land on your cable box that the government's going to make sure to give you as part of the stimulus package. Mr. Haney, gee, Mr. Douglas, you seem to have a cold. Here, let me give you a Kleenex. That'll be 5 cents. Anyway, last week I was listening to one politician after another to some talk about this fine print on this new stimulus bill in which the federal government would be allowed to tell doctors what kinds of treatments they may offer and what kind of insured patients they may have. And if somebody's too old, they may not be able to get a treatment because we got to care about the global village. This puts us one mammoth step forward towards socialized healthcare and, frankly, toward Soylent Green. It's being rammed down the throats of our citizens under the guise of providing jobs. And we keep hearing from our trustworthy public servants, well, if those phrases are actually in there, mark my words, they will be removed before this passes. Well, that's very reassuring from senators like Arlen Specter and others who, if we take them at their word, were about to vote for a bill which evidently had all kinds of stuff in the middle that they knew nothing about. This comes as no surprise, given that the wild turkey contains as many pages as two phone books pasted together. Well, never mind that. We still need to act quickly. Better do something. Better to do something than to do nothing. Really? I guess it all depends on what that something is. Hey, guys, everybody loves a Tootsie Roll Pop, but before you start licking, maybe you should check out that chewy center. However, we left out the best part of this new stimulus package. $400 million for global warming research. Whoa, that'll jumpstart the economy. Now, do you suppose any of that money will be allocated to scientists who do not believe the world is warming and want to continue research to make an even more compelling case? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. After all, the government will not be able to control the auto industry and other areas of the private sector quite so easily if global warming turns out to be untrue. Besides, Al Gore told us the debate is over. That settles it as far as I'm concerned. Question, if the debate is really over and if global warming is a fact, why do we need to pay millions more to study? If we are not open to an alternative view of climate phenomenon, what exactly is being researched? One might answer that we need to also study how fast the Earth is warming so that we might better prepare by giving Congress an even bigger budget and further power over our lives. But inasmuch as the Earth has been cooling for the last 3 years, $400 million spent on observing the warming in the shadow of a $1 trillion deficit might just be a tad bit on the obsessive side. Just one man's opinion. While we're on the subject of weather, weather may just explain how we got into this mess in the first place. You're all familiar with the phrase, a perfect storm. We even had a movie by the same name. Well, that's how we got here. A perfect storm blew in. And generally, when we think of a storm, we imagine some non-sentient entity that forms out at sea with certain kinds of currents and fatal forces of winds, or maybe an earthquake causing a tidal wave. But what happens when seemingly random elements of nature converge? In that case, we might just witness a perfect storm. Perfect does not always mean good. A perfect tidal wave may just be an unusually huge wave, perfect in the generic sense of the term. Unfortunately, that wave will also function as a perfect monster to coastal dwellers who would rather have lived a while longer than experienced a rare phenomenon of nature. Can one situation be perfectly disastrous while another situation is perfectly benign? The answer is yes. Nature, of course, is not a conscious entity, so we would not use terms like evil in describing a crippling storm. But then the word storm can also be used as a metaphor for the injuries perpetrated by human beings. And so the fair question continues. Can one act be perfectly evil just as another act is perfectly good? For history to be made, bad history as well as good, we need the right person at the right time. The right person at the wrong time will have little effect. The wrong person at the right time will not accomplish much either. But the right person at the right time knows how to harness, package, and sell the debris left over from a perfect storm. If he also has a little charisma, it helps him a heck of a lot. When Obama was running for president, multiple Freudian slips with Joe the Plumber and several other unguarded interviews revealed his passion for a mandatory redistribution of wealth. This is commonly called socialism. But Obama is smart enough to know what a bad word socialism can be, so he didn't use the word. Socialist governments often, not always, but often go hand in hand with dictatorships, oligarchies, or other paradigms that suppress freedom, stifle speech, and force the populace to be completely dependent upon Big Brother. This is another reason politicians avoid the word. Socialist is not a handy noun when one wants to come into power. Obama sounded embarrassed and caught off guard when his socialist agenda reared its ugly head. Even though he has an extreme leftist ideology, he was not so naive as to think this belief system could be forced fed down the throats of fellow Americans. The original plan was to boil the frog slowly. That all changed when the perfect storm came our way. Now, mind you, Obama did not create the storm, but he sure knew how to use it. With various phases, the storm elements eventually overlapped. Obama figured out how to channel the intersection his direction. Phase one of the perfect storm, the reputation of George Bush. Bush gets a mixed review from me. He was a good president in some ways and a terrible president in other ways, but he is not responsible for every single problem befalling our nation. Honestly, if somebody accidentally dropped their hot dog and got mustard on their lap, they would find a way to blame George W. Bush. How does Bush contribute toward Obama's perfect storm? By giving Obama immunity to all criticism. Do you think Obama was running against John McCain in the last election? You're mistaken. Obama was running against Bush. He knew McCain was nothing like Bush. He knew the reason many Republicans deserted McCain was because he was not conservative enough. McCain was Bush's thorn in the side the entire 8 years of Bush's presidency. None of this mattered. All Obama had to do was lie through his teeth and portray McCain as 4 more years of George Bush. That was enough to satisfy a significant majority. Just watch. 4 years from now, when Obama wants to get reelected, he will run against Bush once again. I keep listening to hopeful conservative talking heads. Obama's on too high of a pedestal, they say. People expect him to walk on water and solve all of our problems. That's a tough order. Nobody can live up to it. Obama will make our economy worse. What's he going to say 4 years from now when our national debt is in the trillions of dollars and even more people are unemployed? Well, I hate to shatter the hopes of my conservative peers, but I can tell you just exactly what Obama is going to say. He's going to say the disastrous policies of George W. Bush were so far-reaching, so entrenching, and so massively tentacled that it will take an additional 4 years to get ourselves out of this quagmire. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Coming up, we're going to be discussing the question, should we take the Bible's creation account, literal six-day creation account, literally? First, we're going through the latest news. And I had an announcement. I'd like to keep you abreast of events that I'm doing in San Diego. There's a play that I wrote when I was 19 years old and searching for God. It's called Eternal Reach. It's been performed many times by many casts all over the country. And the last time it was performed in San Diego, it won the East County Performing Arts Award for Best Director, my son having directed it. He's directing a new version, and I'm in it as one of the actors. You've heard my son on my program. He's the voice of Disclaimer Dan. You've also heard his wife as Smiley Miley, but they're in a much more serious play. And East County Californian reviewed it this way last time. Intellectual masterwork, very profound and very important. Vernon Grounds, president emeritus of Denver Seminary, says, gripping drama. It presents ultimate issues with a moving power. Come experience this Friday night, the 20th, Eternal Reach, a life-changing Christian drama. Imagine waking up in a mysterious, inescapable prison with three strangers. Each subject is wearing a wristband reading, "You will be asked to explain the meaning of life." This instigates a deep and bitter discussion about the purpose of human existence. What's your version of the meaning of life? Somewhere in this play, you will find your own thoughts, your own words, in your own dreams. Pastors, youth pastors, and church staff are especially invited. You can all come, but we particularly want to invite them to see if they might want to have this performed at their church. Come see the show, meet the actors, have dessert, find out about the ministry that sponsors it, Creative Evangelism. It's going to be at Hill Country Community Church on Lakeview Road. Now, if you want easy directions and more information about the play, all you have to do is remember my website, bobsiegel.net. That's Bob Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. Right on the front page, there's a link that says Eternal Reach. Give you all the info you want about performance times, directions, more about the play, everything. Let's continue. We've been talking about the perfect storm, kind of a metaphor for the chain of political events that happened. And I told you that the first aspect of the perfect storm that Obama was able to take advantage of was George W. Bush. Bush has inoculated him from criticism because no matter what the problem, he'll blame it on Bush. Rest assured, if the economy is still bad 4 years from now, when Obama is running for re-election, it will be Bush's fault. And if a terrorist attack on the magnitude of 9/11 comes our way, it will also be Bush's fault. The fact that Obama is kissing up to organizations like Hamas and dictators like Ahmadinejad will have nothing to do with it. Never mind that compromise emboldens terrorists. Never mind that they always strike again when they see a sign of weakness. When it happens, we will simply be told that if Bush had not gone into Iraq, none of this would have taken place. Bush will receive no credit for having kept the country safe during the 7 years following 9/11. Instead, he will be blamed when Obama's appeasement policies bring fanatical Islam crashing down on top of us. Catching on? Obama will run against George Bush for his second term, just as he ran against George Bush for his first term. Bush has inoculated Obama from any kind of criticism or protest. The media will be on Obama's side. After all, Bush was the illegitimate president, supposedly the guy selected, not elected. Bush is the one everybody hates. Besides, the media will look like they're not doing their job if they don't go after some politician, and Obama shares their leftist ideology, so they can't go after him. If the new kid on the block is forbidden territory, there's little else to do but hit the Bush default setting. So watch for the media to act as Obama's sidekick. Obama is Batman. George Bush is the Joker. And our media is Robin, the boy wonder. But there's another reason the media won't dare to take on Obama. And that leads to the second phase of the perfect storm. Phase two, our country has become shell-shocked by the word racist. In fact, we are not a racist country anymore. Of course, there are still racists out there, but as a nation that makes policy, we are not a racist country anymore. We haven't been for a long time, but it doesn't matter. People have become as frightened of being labeled a racist as previous generations feared the designation communist during the McCarthy era. Even though typical politicians would not have been able to sell a radical left agenda, Obama can. Why? Because anyone who opposes him is accused of objecting to the man's skin color. It could not possibly be an objection to socialism. It has to be color. Since we're not allowed to use socialism as our concern, socialism will prosper. And that's phase two of the perfect storm. Shell-shocked to the accusation of racism. phase three of the perfect storm, a very obvious one. The economy. Although Obama made a little headway early on in the election by portraying McCain as Bush reincarnated, that strategy was starting to falter when confronted by the fresh, vibrant popularity of Sarah Palin. McCain and Palin actually began to lead by double digits in many polls. Then the housing crisis reached its peak, short-circuited Wall Street, and the Democrats had a new disaster to blame on Bush, which rivaled Hurricane Katrina. Never mind that Bush and McCain both tried to warn the Democrats to stop encouraging subprime loans. The race card trumped all warning. Organizations such as Acorn threatened banks with accusations of discrimination if mortgages were not handed out like lollipops to people who could not afford them. What a combination of ingredients! What a blend of potent flavors! Bad mortgages mixed with the roar of race baiters. Stir carefully and let it simmer for a decade or two. Sprinkle in a pinch of Bush bashing and presto, voila! The very culprits who ruined our economy are now poised as the doctors who will fix our economy. Honestly, the very idea of a Barney Frank or a Nancy Pelosi lecturing CPOs on how to run a company is laughable at the very least and horrific at the very most. Banks did not create this problem. They amplified the problem after an invasion by politicians and special interest groups. Sour banks took their toll on the housing industry. It then trickled down to small business owners who could not get a line of credit anymore. With micro companies laying off workers, we found ourselves with a surplus of unemployed people, and the unemployed cannot afford to buy brand new cars. Neither can cars be built without the same credit stream, which has dried up. This is why the auto industry then had to come and beg Congress for a bailout. Now, I hate the idea of politicians helping banks and businesses because the price for that help is control. Still, one can hardly blame those who look to Congress for assistance when Congress dug their bottomless pit in the first place. No, I don't blame them at all, but oh, what a sad sight to watch leftist demagogues handing out sanctimonious lectures on how to foster a company. Have you stood in line at a post office lately? There's your three-dimensional snapshot of a well-managed government business. And when the day comes that we no longer need a post office anymore, due to email, FedEx, fax machines, electronic greeting cards, and finally Grandma herself sending off that Christmas fruitcake through UPS, the post office will still exist. It will always exist because our government institutions never die. Barney Frank or Chris Dodd lecturing a CPO is like Captain Hook trying to teach Peter Pan how to fly. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. We're talking about the perfect storm. Part of the perfect storm was the inoculation George Bush gave to Obama. Part of it is the inoculation, the accusation of racism gave to Obama. And part of it, of course, is the economy. And when the auto industry goes to Congress for a bailout because of problems that Congress started and caused, by giving out subprime loans and forcing banks to give out subprime loans. Congress says, okay, we'll give you the money. But in return, we will tell you what kinds of salaries to give your CPOs. Forgetting for a moment the nifty salary hike Congress votes itself each year, and forgetting how many of them live in mansions or fly around on their own private jets, let's just ask another bonehead question. On what competent authority does our government dictate the kinds of bonuses a company may offer its executives? Sometimes money can be an incentive to strive for excellence, but then excellence in the private sector smacks head into the goal of socialism. And then Congress continues, by the way, we will also tell you what kinds of cars to make and what levels of fuel emissions are allowed. They get away with this demand because they have all the money. Not that there's enough gold in Fort Knox anymore. They're also printing money, and that paper is as real as a $500 bill from a Monopoly game. Still, our trustworthy federal heads appear to have the money, so they appear to have the power. If anyone dares to speak against their demands on the auto industry, they hear a handy-dandy response from Walla Walla, Washington. Environmental concerns. And that leads to the next phase, phase four of the perfect storm, global warming, or alleged global warming. No, Al, the debate is not over, but because we have convinced people of this incoming disaster, the government will be free to pass all kinds of rules and all kinds of regulations. Cars must be made smaller and cleaner. Even Christmas lights can be moderated, dovetailing into other leftist ideologies. After all, religion can foster dissent. Oh, and we can't drill for oil anymore because that would harm Carrie the caribou and Perry the polar bear. This will make the economy even worse. To fix the economy, Obama and his fellow Democrats will tax the rich even more. The rich, incidentally, are those individuals who work in the private sector, commonly known as the middle class. Soon there will be no more middle class. There will be wealthy politicians with Hollywood chums and a bankrupt population looking to the government as a Santa Claus to keep them out of poverty. Once you feed a cat, you never lose it. And once you give money to citizens who do not deserve such a prize, you have their loyalty. Frankly, even the innocent guy whose business goes belly up will be grateful for a handout, if a handout is the only way he can provide for his family anymore, and I don't blame him at all. Don't even think about who caused the recession. Just be grateful to the fellow who fixes it, even if both parties are one and the same. Okay, let's add this up. Our new president is immune to criticism, partly because people don't dare speak against a person of color, and partly because Bush is a scapegoat for absolutely everything. Unchallenged by most, he gets his Congress to pass laws about hate speech or fairness. This ends up silencing the remaining few who would still speak out. He then fixes the economy by stealing from the entrepreneurs who once pumped blood into our capitalist system. He bails out banks by taking over banks. Once the government owns the bank, they own everything. Reaching further into the private sector, they self-righteously defend themselves as the champions of Earth who must kill any business that contributes to a bad environment. With the private sector completely neutralized, we have no choice but to depend upon politicians for everything. We're tempted to welcome their stimulus package, even when it includes money for Acorn and other groups that laid this smelly egg in the first place. While we may wonder how millions of dollars for condoms, cable TV converter boxes, climate change research, or National Endowment for the Arts can jumpstart our economy, we will no longer be in a position to say much about it. The leftist agenda is upon us in one fast swipe. They were patient. They waited for years. They waited for the perfect storm. There is still hope, but before we prepare for the battle ahead, we must first understand how we got dragged into this mess. After wising up to the lure and enticement of Sauron's ring, then and only then can we send Sam and Frodo to Mount Doom. So, you think you are a liberal? You are proud of that title? Well, let's just find out how liberal you truly are. Test yourself. You've heard of the Pepsi Challenge. This is the Liberal Challenge. Part one of the challenge, the qualities of liberals. Number one, do you challenge the status quo? Are you willing to march to the beat of a different drum instead of blindly following the majority? Do you push the envelope with humor, making your points in sometimes unorthodox ways, such as the outrageous humor exhibited by the not-ready-for-primetime players on the original Saturday Night Live, a program that went even farther than The Daily Show. Oh, sure, some jokes are off limits, such as racial jokes. But beyond that, are you willing to laugh, even when it flies in the face of another person's moral code or stuffy sensibilities? If people can't handle a joke, do you tell them to lighten up? Are you willing to protest any injustice, even that of your own government? How about your own school? How about your own university? Are you against censorship? Does the very notion of free speech suppression scare you or infuriate you? Do you stick up for the weak? Do you stick up for the disenfranchised? If you answered yes to at least questions 1, 2, 4, and 5, you certainly have the heart and intention of a liberal. If you answered affirmative to all, your heart is liberal. Plus, however, and it's a big however, the test is not over yet. Time for part 2, the reality check. Do you oppose the fairness doctrine, hate speech legislation, and other proposed laws that would limit free speech, or are you buying into excuses such as free speech must be responsible speech, or free speech must be sensitive speech, or free speech must be tolerant speech? When guest speakers on college campuses have pies thrown in their faces or get shouted down, you complain and stand by the speakers even if they do not articulate your own viewpoint? Do you challenge your teachers and professors when they define a hateful person as anyone who disagrees with them? When our new president says that people should put away ideology and instead come together, as if he himself does not have an ideology, do you challenge the man? Do you challenge him when he says people should stop listening to certain talk show hosts? Are you even the slightest bit suspicious of a public figure who does not want you to hear opposing views? Are there jokes you will not allow yourself to listen to because they are not politically correct? Do you object to the death of infants through abortion or infanticide, both of which are legal in our country under certain circumstances? If not, please answer this question. Who is weaker or more disenfranchised than a helpless infant that cannot defend itself? If you answered no to most of part 2 questions, then you are not a liberal. You may claim to be, but you are not. Sorry, you are, in fact, mainstream, status quo, unwilling to challenge, unwilling to push envelopes, unwilling to laugh, and very willing to censor others. Frankly, my friend, you have become the Fundy Dundy conservative you always speak against with such passion. Now, please understand, my purpose just now was not to insult you. It was to wake you up, because I care about you, and I want to wake you up before it's too late. Before we find ourselves prisoners in a totalitarian state that neither conservative nor liberal will be happy in. This is Bob Siegel, the true liberal, whom some might still call conservative, and a Democrat, incidentally, making the obvious obvious.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these things, our call-in toll-free number 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. You can also submit your questions by email, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. This first email is from Chris in San Diego. Bob, the Bible teaches salvation and ongoing sanctification through grace. We are taught to be open about our weaknesses and inability to handle this world on our own. Example, the book of James. I'm humbled and confused when I read about the heroes of the Protestant Reformation my daughter is learning about. John Huss, Tyndale, and many others risked their lives, and many were burned at the stake for daring to assert the word over the Pope. If God hasn't given us the courage and boldness today to do what they did, we don't need to sweat it, right? The reason these men were able to do what they did was by God's strength. If God hasn't given us that strength yet, then we are off the hook. Right? Can you hear the desperation in Chris's words? In other words, he says, we can't rejoice in Jesus' treatment of the repentant thief on the cross and then 2 seconds later expect ourselves to manufacture the courage to be another Martin Luther or Dietrich Bonhoeffer, right? Another way I could have asked the courage question is whether we can blame God for our failings. Imagine if I'm put in a situation where I need to stand up for my faith. If I fail, couldn't I say I'm saved by grace and God didn't give me the needed courage, so it isn't my fault? Well, first of all, Chris, thank you for the very honest question and the humility it took to write it. And I'm sure all of us at times ponder the future and wonder if we would be able to do the right thing when put to the test. Had Simon Peter given this subject more attention and prayer, he would not have found himself denying Jesus, something he was certain he could never do. On the other hand, after receiving the Holy Spirit, Peter did take courageous stands for the rest of his life and ultimately was crucified by Emperor Nero for his Christian faith. In fact, church tradition tells us Peter insisted on being crucified upside down because he considered it too much of an honor to be crucified right side up like his Lord. I agree that God must give us the strength. All people get scared. A courageous person is one who admits that he is afraid but does the right thing anyway. Sometimes that is impossible apart from God, especially if we're putting our lives on the line. The Bible does promise that God will never allow us to be tempted beyond our ability to endure. That promise can be found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. For that reason, we can assume that people who are called to die or suffer for Christ have been made ready. That is the significant wrinkle in this discussion. Chris, if you find yourself in a trying situation, it will mean God has decided you can handle it. The strength to get through and the nurture of His Spirit will be available, whether it immediately seems that way or not. Hang in there and keep the faith. Now here's an interesting question from Mark and Diana of El Cajon. Hello, Bob. Diana and I were listening to a radio program tonight. It was a religious talk show that wasn't mine. They're talking about another religious talk show. Harold Camping. He's the president of Family Radio. And on Family Radio, you are not allowed to disagree with Harold Camping because he owns the station. Anyway, I digress. They say Harold Camping, was taking calls from listeners and in one call was having a conversation regarding the end of the world. Camping claimed that the Bible says explicitly that the end of the world will be on 5/21/011. He further said that a day is 1,000 years long and that 1,000 years is a day. He used 4989 BC as a starting point, then adds 2011. Boy, where do people come up with this stuff? Then adds 2011, and of course it equals 7,000 years. We didn't understand a lot of the conversation. I don't blame you. I don't think anybody can understand a lot of that conversation. Anyway, we didn't understand a lot of the conversation, but I guess the man was trying to convey something about 7 days when they were the same as 7,000 years. Where May 21st comes from, he didn't make clear either. Have you ever heard of this man or of what he is saying, Mark and Diane? Mark and Diane, I have heard of him before. I have heard him on the radio many times. Yes, there will be a definite second coming of Christ, which people associate with the end of the world. Unfortunately, nonsense about the end of the world is as old as the world itself. Jesus told us that no man knows the day or the hour of his return. So, with all due respect, camping is completely contradicting Jesus. Now, as for the length of a day, camping is evidently quoting 2 Peter 3:8, but he's quoting it out of context, where Peter does indeed say, with God, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. But let's analyze this statement for a moment. If we take that entire summation literally, at face value, it becomes a statement of nonsense. One 24-hour day is 1,000 years long. That's how we'd have to take it literally. But that would be our first conclusion. What about the second conclusion? What about the remainder of the message? We'd then have to say, and 1,000 of our years is really only the length of a 24-hour day. See, they become contradictory statements. Now, of course, Peter is speaking under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, so although the statement might appear to be a contradiction, it is not. Peter was answering skeptics who thought God was too slow in bringing about the return of Jesus. This is Peter's way of saying that to God, there is no such thing as time, and therefore designations such as fast or slow are irrelevant where God is concerned. Time is a human limitation. This is why the book of Revelation tells us that Jesus was slain before the foundation of the world, Revelation 13:8. Now, was Jesus slain before God created the world? Or was Jesus slain at a specific time in history, namely 33 AD? Both are true. God is removed from time. Time is a human limitation. 2,000 years ago, long before scientists had a clue, the Bible said things about time and space that quantum physics is now saying about time and space. And that subject relates to my next question. Bob, if God created us, who created God? Would he himself have to have a beginning and an end? That's an excellent question. Comes up all the time when I debate atheists. By the way, I'm debating an atheist. I'm debating him in May. And you can start preparing yourself, praying about it. I'll be giving you more information about it. But anyway, it's a fair question. It comes up at debates. And I have an interesting answer for you to consider. The need for a beginning and an end is necessary only within the boundaries of time and space. The Bible portrays God as being completely removed from time and space. For this reason, God will not have a beginning or an end. The existence of something beyond time and its limitations, once again, is a serious ongoing discussion in the field of quantum physics. More about God and time when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show 4 nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Back to the Bob Siegel Show. You can submit your questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. This is a question that I get frequently, and I promised you we would get to it at the top of the program. Bob, do you accept a literal six-day creation account? I have no problem believing that an all-powerful God could have created the world in six literal days. He could also have done it in 6 minutes. He could have done it in 6 seconds. He's God. Having said that, we are not forced to this conclusion when we read the Bible. Although I myself do not believe in the theory of evolution, I don't. It should still be pointed out that Genesis was not written as a science book, but instead as a history of the people of Israel. Only the first three chapters of Genesis talk about the creation of the world and the fall of human beings into sin. This tells us something immediately about the priority of the writer. He was obviously giving a quick review of an oral tradition already known to the people. Only when Abraham comes on the scene in chapter 12 does the narrative slow down and begin to give intricate detail. So we conclude that specifics about creation were not the writer's intention. Now, the first chapter of Genesis is written in a style of writing known as Hebrew poetry. It is not seeking to give any kind of order to creation, as evidenced by the fact that the world exists with water and vegetation prior to the creation of the sun. Now, the word for day in Hebrew, the word yom, did not necessarily have to mean a literal 24-hour day, but could also refer to an event. And it referred to an event in the first three chapters of the book of Joel the minor prophet. This poem, then, could simply be God's way of discussing different events in the stages of creation. You read Genesis 1, and it says things like, I'm going to create water, I'm going to create sun, I'm going to create people, I'm going to create plants, I'm going to create rocks. Well, we see all those things created. Once again, the Bible portrays God as being completely removed from time. Time is a human limitation. When we ask whether it took God 6 days or 6 million years to create the world, the question is irrelevant. In fact, it took God no amount of time at all to create the world because God does not exist in time. To speak at our level, God is using language we will relate to. Since we live in time and space, it is possible that a very long process over the years, as we understand years, created the world and slowly brought about different forms of life. Now, I know a lot of you will disagree with that. That's fine. I do want to mention that although Genesis chapter 1 was written as a poem, Genesis 2 was not written as a poem. Genesis 2 was written as a historical narrative. The rest of Genesis 2 through chapter 50 is historical narrative. So in this historical narrative, I accept a real Garden of Eden, a real Adam, a real Eve, a real Satan. I accept all that. You remember my show last week with George Runyon as my guest. We mentioned that both of us accept all of that. Chapter 1, though, was a poem. And a lot of times people go, oh, well, the order of the creation was different in chapter 1 than it was in chapter 2. I say, look, in those days, it was very common. And we can see this when we look at other epics from other cultures, a poetic overview followed by a literal detailed account. Okay, here's another question that comes up. Bob, can you reconcile free will with God's sovereignty? Now, what they mean by that is the Bible says that all things work together according to God's plan. So the question is, well, if everything works according to his plan, then we couldn't possibly have a free will. Well, that's not exactly true. If I were going to get into a chess game, well, first of all, if I was going to get into a chess game with anybody, chances are I would not win. I have won at chess before, but it's very rare. Not because I'm a dumb person. I consider myself to be a fairly intelligent person. In fact, I have 2 college degrees, although these days that isn't saying a whole lot. But I do have 2 college degrees. And I think I had them from a time when college was even better than it is now. But when I play chess, I tend to space out. I don't pay attention. I could put my queen in jeopardy from a pawn because I'm just spacing out and daydreaming. So when I play chess, it's likely that I'm going to lose. I taught my son how to play chess in junior high school. He beat me the first time. I've beaten the little skunk a few times since then, but a very few times because, again, I'm a daydreamer and I space out. Now, that's a likely thing. If I were to play a genius Russian professional chess player, you could submit that it is predestined that I'm going to lose. You could say it is impossible for me to win that game. It's in the cards or in the chessboard, better way of saying it. He's going to win. Now, does that mean I don't have a free will? I have a will. I can still move my piece. I could even move it on any square I want for a while. I may even move my piece on a square that the other guy wishes I hadn't moved. But if he's a genius Russian professional chess player, and I'm trying to compliment the Russians because they do have good chess players there, he's going to win. He could take my move and plug it into his master plan. Let me illustrate this again a little more humorously, but it's an absolutely true story. For many years, I ran a college fellowship called Sojourners Christian Fellowship. And we used to have that white elephant gift exchange. You've probably all played it by now, where you get together and everybody buys a gift that's only 10, 15 bucks. The kinds of gifts that some people might like, others won't. And the joke is to see if you get stuck with a bad gift or a good gift. And you have the choice. They call out numbers. Everybody's given a number at the beginning of the party. And you open up a gift or you steal a gift that's already been opened. Well, the guy that gets number one's got to open one. But after that, people can steal. After a gift stolen three times, can't be stolen anymore, and you see who gets stuck with what. Well, I wanted to stick it to my friend Jim. If you're out there listening, hi, Jim. Jim's my good friend. And I love to have jokes at Jim's expense. The joy that man has given us for just being who he is. Anyway, I decided I wanted Jim to get stuck with a really dopey present. Now, this was a number of years ago when LPs were still around. CDs had come out, but you could still go to a store and buy an LP, a 33 and a third, and they still had turntables. Well, I went to the store and bought a $6 Million Man album that's an old dopey 70s TV show, and a Wonder Woman album, and I wrapped them up in such a way that it was apparent that there was a record album underneath. You just didn't know what the record album was. That was step one. Step two, I took my friend Eric and I said, pass the rumor to Jim that there's a Seeker album at Bay. Now, the Seekers, remember Georgie Girl? There's a New World Summer, big group in the 60s. Jim's not a baby boomer, but he loves rock. He loves oldies and he loves 60s in addition to the current stuff. Loves the Seekers. So now the rumor is put out to Jim that there's a Seekers album out there. Next, I go to Grace, who's handing out the numbers. I say, make sure Jim gets number one. I manipulated the circumstances. I'm sitting next to my friend Brett. They call out number one. It's Jim. I turn to Brett. I said, you want a lesson on predestination and sovereignty as it relates to free will? Jim has a free will, right? He can choose any present he wants, right? But on the other hand, I'll tell you what present he's going to choose. As a matter of fact, there is only one present right now Jim can possibly choose. He's going to open that one over there. And Jim walked right over to it, unwrapped what he thought was a Seeker album, and got the $6 Million Man. And Wonder Woman, that gift came back next year. The gift came back the following year. We expected that gift to resurrect itself. It came back something like 15 years in a row. One day a guy broke them in half and wrapped them up that way. Finally, somebody decided to put us out of our misery. But you see, Jim had a free will. He could have opened any gift, but I manipulated the circumstances. Now, I'm not God. God can really manipulate the circumstances. God can take our creativity, and he could include it in his will. Now, the Bible also teaches that human beings left to their own devices will not seek God. That's true. So God gets credit for using his sovereignty and his spirit to bring us his way, but he does leave us a back door out. Supposing somebody were drowning, but this person wanted to drown. They were trying to commit suicide. Coast Guard doesn't know that. Coast Guard sends over a helicopter, and the purpose of the helicopter is to rescue them. Well, this person doesn't want to be rescued. They lower a rope ladder. The guy doesn't grab it. Coast Guard then takes a net, puts it around the guy against his own will. All he has to do is relax and cooperate with the process and essentially do nothing, and they'll move the crane and they'll heft him up on top of the helicopter. But if he's really determined to die, maybe he could take out a pocket knife, cut a hole in the bottom of the net, and fall to his doom. Just some handy, helpful stories to help you understand God's sovereignty with our free will a little better. I will see you on our Academy Awards show next week. And don't forget Eternal Reach. It didn't win an Academy Award, but it won the East County Performing Arts Award. I will be in the play. I wrote the play, and we're going to do it this Friday. Go to my website for more info, BobSiegel.net. Hope to see you Friday night.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.
Is your fence teetering on its side like the Leaning Tower of Pisa? Are termites feeding off its wood like